I think you gather information about people as much as you evaluate them. How they learn in classroom settings, how they learn on the grass, are they capable of learning from others' mistakes, what do they do with the reps that they get. Really, it's a blank slate from that standpoint, and we're just gathering information about any and all the guys individually and collectively.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Steelers.com Live. I'm Bob Labriola. This is Mike Persuda. I guess we're going to have to do this without Missy Matthews today. She's on vacation. Did you approve that vacation?
I didn't approve that vacation. Did you approve that vacation?
I don't have that kind of power of approval or disapproval. We'll try and carry on without Missy today. That was Mike Tomlin speaking at rookie minicamp. Mike, and you know what that means? Football in shorts has kicked off. That season is upon us. And rookie minicamp was the first opportunity to see some of these guys here.
Yeah, and it beats seeing them in shorts and shirts in Indianapolis running around and navigating the three cone drill and doing all that intricate stuff they were supposed to do out there. I kind of enjoyed rookie minicamp for what it was, not necessarily planning a parade or taking anybody's ring size just yet, but when you see some of these draft picks put that helmet on and put a jersey on and run around and do some things, it gets the mind wandering a little, does it not?
Yeah, and you know, we did see a lot of the guys that we had heard so much about during draft week. And one of the things that I noticed, Mike, was number one pick, naturally, you know, Ryan Shazier. What I noticed about him in these workouts was, I don't know, he just kind of had a little bit of a presence that you would expect or hope for, let me say, from a number one pick. He stood out athletically. He was vocal. I won't say he was a leader in terms of telling other people what to do because he was just learning what to do himself. But, you know, he was the first one up in every drill. He just had a, like I said, a presence, a vibe about him that you're hoping to see from your number one pick.
Yeah, and that went all the way through the screwing up of drills. When that occurred, Ryan Shazier dropped down and give me 20. You know, that's the,
right.
That's the protocol. When the veterans get here, that's what they'll be doing. You'll see that at St. Vincent if you go out to training camp. And he was doing those push-ups all on his own, holding himself to the standard lab. I don't know if he's been to Heinz Field yet, at least the locker room part where you walk in and the sign says the standard is the standard. But he knows the standard is the standard.
You know, and this weekend, two practices on Friday, two on Saturday, one on Sunday, workouts more than practices, no pads, just helmets, shorts. But Daniel McCullers, the largest man in the league or the largest man to come out of the draft, let's say he forgot a couple of times that you're not exactly supposed to tackle the running back. You know, when they were doing 11 on 11 or 9 on 7, those kind of drills, you kept hearing the coaches have to yell at these guys, let them run, you know, let them run. But, you know, you like the enthusiasm, and he is big. And as we're seeing him there, he is big, but he is not sloppy. I don't know that I've ever seen a guy 360 without big rolls of fat around him, and this guy doesn't have it.
This kid has an 18% body fat count.
Right.
I mean, that's just unheard of for a guy that size. And that's one of the things that intrigues the Steelers about him. 6'7", 352, and yet he went in the sixth round. So
right.
That tells you that he has not yet maximized 6'7", 352 with 18% body fat. But, Bob, what if he does?
Yes. And you know, what he – you know, I was talking to Kevin Colbert a little bit about this, and, you know, when you're that big and, you know, what the Steelers kind of have planned for him, you know, at this point it is, you know, late May still. But you put a man that large over the center, okay, 6'7", 350. And he comes off the ball, and if he just starts churning his legs, and he has, as Wolf would say, big ham hocks and big calves, so he has some power, he gets in on that center. He could just push that guy back right into the backfield unless the other team double teams him, you know, just to stop his progress. He doesn't have to get in very far, puts up his hands at 6'7". That's a pretty big obstruction there. So, you know, the Steelers were looking for, and fans wanted the Steelers to look for, size in the middle of the defensive line. They got some with this guy.
Yeah, you said the magic word there when you mentioned double team. And as John Mitchell reminded us during draft weekend, if you want to approach this the way a math major would, in the Steelers scheme, if a nose tackle gets double-teamed, now it's 10 on 9 in favor of the defense, and one of the nine's the quarterback. So that mathematically should work. You're going to have an unblocked guy if the nose tackle can just take up two.
Okay, and we'll go from the biggest to the shortest. Shortest. Notice I said shortest and not smallest, because Dree Archer, he may be short, but again, this guy looks like a football player, and especially a football player who comes from a major college program. So, you know, Dree Archer is short, but he. What impressed me about him was, Mike, pretty smooth in terms of catching the ball, punts, passes. I like the sound of the football hitting a guy's hand. You know, if it sounds like it's going into a pillow, that's what you're looking for. If it smacks like that, even if he catches it, that's really not what you're after.
No, wait, are you calling the MAC major college football on a par with your beloved SEC?
No, I didn't say on a par, but it is in the same classification.
Technically the same classification. Hey, man,
I mean, the Big Ten is in the same as the SEC, and I wouldn't call that on a par either.
Nor would I. I think this kid, the transition is going to be a little more difficult for him. I think with a Shazier or a Stephon Tuitt, you have that natural progression, not just from a football power, but a place where there are expectations, where you are supposed to win, where there's a lot of stuff on the wall because a lot of the people that came before you have won, and they're counting on winning again. So in that regard, easier transition for those two guys. I think Dree Archer is going to be in for a little bit of an eye-opening experience. But, Bob, you also said the magic word. You're hitting a lot of the key points today. Double-team the nose tackle and catch the football. I watched this guy catch punts on Saturday, and I didn't see him drop any. We had him on the WDVE morning show today, and I asked him, did you drop any, just in case I might have missed one? I didn't, and more importantly, he didn't. He catches the football.
Yeah, that is critical. And we got a chance to catch up with Dree Archer during rookie minicamp. Let's take a listen.
Yeah, no, I think I can play a big role in the playmaking capability, you know, different positions, running back, receiver, you know, and helping in special teams game.
I'm sure you've heard a lot about your size. Is that, how much is that a motivator? Is that something that drives you?
It's definitely motivating. You know, I've been here my whole life. You know, that's why I play with the chip on my shoulder. You know, everyone tells me I'm too small. You know, I can't take hits. You know, I can't do this. I can't do that. But you know, I'm just out to play football, and I know what I can do.
How much do you enjoy special teams? You obviously did very well on it.
I do it a lot. You know, I know that's a big part of football. You know, and when you have good special teams, you know, you can have a good team.
Are you comfortable punt returning, or is it more kickoff returns?
No, I'm comfortable with both. You know, I've been working on both.
I heard no one kicked you last year, and then one team that did, you took it to the house.
Yes, you heard correct. No, that's what happened.
You know, Mike, another one of the guys that I find interesting, certainly as we're going through this early part of this process, is the first pick in the sixth round, Jordan Zumwalt, linebacker from UCLA. I personally believe, you know, that he's going to end up inside for the Steelers. But, you know, because, you know, rookie minicamp, just a little sidetrack here, rookie minicamp, the people who are allowed to attend, it's a very limited window. People are either rookies or ones in terms of their accrued seasons. And if you're not a rookie or a one, you are not permitted to come. So it's not even one of those voluntary things. You're actually not permitted. So there weren't a large number of people there participating. And so, you know, I wouldn't put too much faith in too much of anything we saw about where guys lined up, because, you know, in a lot of instances, to get through a drill, you had to put people in places just to have 11 on a side. But Jordan Zumwalt, I think this is a guy who's going to end up inside. And I don't know, the way he looks there as we're looking at him, he just has special teams written all over him to me. I mean, I think that this guy, the number of tackles he had at UCLA, the whole concept of, you know, find the football, get the man with the ball on the ground, which is primarily job one in special teams coverage, this guy has that skill set. I think that is his ticket onto this roster, at least early in his career.
Yeah, I would agree with you. If you don't get the ball on the ground in special teams, if that's job one and you fail to do that, job two doesn't really matter.
Job two, then, is lining up for the extra point.
Put the extra point team on.
Yeah.
You don't want that. Special teams, to me, I don't care whether this kid's inside, outside, left, right, whatever. I think special teams is his ticket. I'm told he's very competitive, and he's got kind of the special teams mentality, if you will. The guy that you saw him working with in the white T-shirt, the new addition to the staff. What's his name?
Joey Porter.
Used to play. Yeah, Joey Porter. A lot of talk about Joey Porter all weekend, particularly when the defensive players came up. A lot of talk draft weekend,
yes.
I should say. But Joey Porter attitude, he can impart pass rushing attitude on Jarvis Jones. He can impart special teams attitude on Jordan Zumwalt. I don't think he's going to have to try real hard on that ladder.
Yeah, and, you know, it was interesting watching Joey Porter, really. This was our first opportunity to see how he interacted on the field. He seemed very natural. Guys were listening to him,
very
obviously.
Thoughtful there, rubbing the chin,
well,
analytical.
But, I mean, right.
Everything you always thought of Joey Porter as a player.
Right, but there are times for all of those other things, too. I mean, and again, as I said, he was very at ease. It looked like he was communicating his ideas. Everyone seemed to be engaged with him. I think that is a very nice offseason move for the Steelers. We were talking about Jordan Zumwalt. We also caught up with him during rookie minicamp. Let's take a listen.
Do you feel like you do kind of have an advantage due to the similarities of what you did in college and this defense?
Yeah, I guess. I guess so. You know, I'm not – like they had some guys that were able to come in early and learn a lot. I wasn't able to because of the quarter system. But, you know, I guess I have a little bit of equal advantage to them because I was running it for the past 2 years. But just different vocabulary, different language. You know, you have to relearn all the different verbiage and things like that. But scheme-wise, it's roughly the same.
Do you feel like you're kind of just getting a small piece of it and it's just going to keep
absolutely
packing on?
I literally feel like we got it. And then the next day they're like, okay, well, here's a bunch more. So it's like, oh, but it's not too bad. They're being very good and very lenient with, you know, mishaps and mistakes and things like that. And they're really good at being coaches. And instead of just hooting and hollering, you know, they're teaching us right and wrong. So they're helping out a lot.
What do you think about the linebackers coaching staff?
Oh, I love them. They're awesome. He's a lot of fun, too. A lot of fun, too. And he's the best in the league for a reason. You know what I mean? He's really good, knows everything that he's talking about. I think he's a great man as well. So I get along with him really well.
You know, Mike, one of the things we were talking about earlier was the number of people that the Steelers were actually allowed to have at that rookie minicamp. You have all of your rookie draft picks and undrafted free agents signed, and then everyone else who's a one on your team. But a guy like Landry Jones, Steelers... Who's a two now, only because, even though he didn't take a snap all last year, but he was on the roster as the third quarterback in what everyone knew was a redshirt season, or just unless there was a disaster in terms of injuries, Landry Jones was not going to play. And a guy like this, a young quarterback, developing quarterbacks, is something I think that the league is falling a little bit behind on, and this is an example of why. A guy like Landry Jones was not permitted to be here during rookie orientation, mini camp, or whatever you want to call it, because he was a two, and a guy like Justin Brown, who similarly was a draft pick last year on the last day of the draft, as was Landry Jones, he was on the practice squad all last year, so he was allowed to participate. You know, I don't see why guys who want to participate can't.
Well, you apparently weren't in on the negotiations.
Yes, because, I apparently was not.
As I understand it, each side had lawyers when they hashed out the final copy of this. I think it's ridiculous. A guy like Antoine Blake, correct me if I'm wrong, he's a two also, right?
Yes.
So can't play.
But he played, though, at least in games, real games during the regular season.
Right, but he got here after the season started.
Right.
He's far from developed, and this is a guy that maybe has a chance to make something of himself here. It's one of those things that I scratch my head. I'm with you. I don't get it. If you want to be here participating, I understand if you make it voluntary, but if you want to volunteer, let the guys volunteer. I mean, Jason Worlds was here watching. He was interested.
Yeah. Mike Tomlin agrees with us. Let's take a listen.
You know, I'm a proponent of the offseason. I believe that guys that want an opportunity to work and need an opportunity to work should get an opportunity to work. So anytime you're talking about more opportunities for young guys to grow and develop as players, I'll be for that.
Okay, Mike, let's, you know, we do this around the AFC North periodically, and it's just post-draft kind of still. So let's go around the AFC North in terms of what the other teams in the division did. We'll do this alphabetically. Certainly I would never, ever start with the Ravens.
No.
Any other reason than... There, you know, it begins with a B. What do you think of what they did?
I think it looks pretty familiar, linebacker, defensive lineman, round one, round two. You know, from what I was reading and hearing and discovering in my pre-draft prep, which was expensive and thorough.
Yeah, you've told me that many times.
C.J. Mosley and Ryan Shazier were, you know, pick which one you like better. Those are the two best inside linebackers on the board. And then Timmy Jernigan, a lot like Stephon Tuitt, not necessarily in position, but where they played and what they played for and expectations and preparedness and all that. It's like an arms race. It's like the U.S. and Russia. We got Ryan Shazier. Okay, get Mosley. Oh, my God, they got Stephon Tuitt. We better get Jernigan. Anything that one of these teams has, the other one wants immediately, if not sooner.
Yeah, because as Mike Tomlin often says, two trains, one track. You know, the only difference, I think, between – or the major difference between Mosley and Shazier to me is Mosley is a inside linebacker, run-stuffing inside linebacker who's decent against the pass. He finished his college career at Alabama with about a half dozen interceptions, returned a couple of them for touchdowns, captain on teams that won national championships, a solid player all around. The difference, Ryan Shazier, I think, is a more of a coverage, speed, run-hit linebacker who
played the big leagues in the Big Ten Conference.
And will step up and hit people and fill holes in the running game. So, you know, they're similar players. The Steelers went for the guy, I think, who was a little bit more adept at coverage and blitzing and those kind of things. The Ravens, the guy who's more solid against the run. I mean, I think both teams are going to be happy with their picks. Just one other thing on the Jernigan pick. You know, there seems to be a sentiment that, you know, Ozzie Newsome, the Ravens GM, you know, walks on water. Well, Timmy Jernigan plays the same position that Terrence Cody, the Ravens' number two pick in 2010, plays. So the Steelers are not the only team that often has to draft over and over to try and fill a spot.
They had to replace one of those SEC guys.
It also happens to other teams as well. Okay.
Can I talk about my favorite Ravens pick before we move on?
I'll bet you I know who it is.
John Urschel, offensive lineman, right. Penn State. This is not my research, but Mike Mayock, our buddy who's the analyst or one of the analysts for the NFL Network, he was talking about Urschel at the Combine working on his master's degree in mathematics. Urschel, according to Mike Mayock, wrote a thesis entitled "The Instabilities of the Sun-Jupiter-Asteroid Three-Body Problem." And Urschel has also been published in a periodical called Celestial Mechanics and Dynamical Astronomy. So the Ravens' grade point average went way up, way up. Steelers got to do something about that.
You know, Bill O'Brien told a story about when he took over the job at Penn State. He was talking with his football operations guy, and they were going over the players who were either going to miss part of practice or all of practice with a class schedule, and they had the big thing up on the board, and the yellow dots next to the players meant they would miss part of practice. The blue dots meant they would miss all of practice, and Bill O'Brien was looking at the board, and he pointed to Urschel's name, and there was a green dot there. He goes, "What's the green dot?" And the guy told him, "He teaches a class." So there you go. Certainly too highbrow to be on this show. Okay, yeah. Let's look at the Cincinnati Bengals now. You know, used to be, Mike, we could make fun of the Bengals drafts, but no longer. I mean, the Bengals now do a lot of solid things in the draft. They tend to stick with big school prospects, which, you know, may be a reflection of the fact that they don't have a heavily manned scouting department, let's say. But the Bengals do not make mistakes lately high in the draft, and I think they got a pretty good cornerback, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they got the best cornerback available, even though he wasn't the first one off the board. I really like Darquez Dennard. I've liked Darquez Dennard for a long, long time. And, you know, you mentioned the big school thing, Michigan State kind of back in the football business the last couple of years. I know there are people in this building who put real value on that stuff I was talking about a little bit earlier with Stephon Tuitt and Ryan Shazier and playing in a big-time environment and an environment of expectation. At some colleges, college football is not a voluntary activity where the goal is to get your letter and maybe get to date a cheerleader and grow some character before you leave good old State U. At some places, you're here to win, pal, and if you don't win, we'll find somebody who will because there are people lined up for the opportunity we're giving you. And those guys, you get the right ones. you can get a little juice out of that.
Well, yeah, and you know, Mike Tomlin often talks about when he starts learning these rookies, who is it not too big for? That's what he's talking about there. Jeremy Hill, the Bengals' second pick, running back at LSU. You know, he had some character issues. I think a lot of teams were concerned about some of that. But, you know, the Bengals, a little bit notorious for their relationship with bad boys in the past. Vontaze Burfict didn't exactly come out of college as a Boy Scout. But things have worked out pretty well with him, both as a player and a part of that team and that community. So, you know, the Bengals maybe took a little bit of a chance on Jeremy Hill in the second round. And then later in the draft, I thought this was an interesting pick, A.J. McCarron. How long do you think before Bengals Nation is screaming for somebody to replace the redhead, Andy Dalton?
Second quarter, third preseason game. No, it's interesting. It doesn't necessarily imply pressure right away. They didn't go get Bortles or Johnny Football.
Or pick this guy early either.
Yeah.
Right.
We're having some fun with Big Ten SEC, but I love A.J. McCarron and what he accomplished in college. All this guy did was win championships. And he is not your typical game manager on a stacked college football team where all you have to do is not screw it up. He's got some, you can see him rolling out there. He's got the arm strength to play in this league, Bob. He has the intangibles. He's a leader. I think he's a fascinating prospect, particularly on the fifth round. And, you know, if something should happen to Andy Dalton, if he should be struck by a bolt of lightning or some other misfortune, they have an interesting option.
Yeah, A.J. McCarron, as you mentioned, not just a caretaker with a superior team. I mean, this guy, you know, in last year's game during the season against Texas A&M, I mean, Alabama and A&M got into a shootout. Johnny Football was bringing the Aggies down for touchdowns every time, and A.J. McCarron had to match them, and there were plays that had to be made in that game throughout, and they were playing it at College Station. So, again, this guy has made some plays down the stretch of some big-time games. And so, yeah, it's an interesting pick to me. And, you know, Andy Dalton, again, the fact that they have not been able to win a playoff game with him, you know, I think is something that weighs heavily on the fans' mind. And I did see this.
Well, maybe the teams, too. You know, he's going to start getting to that point where you got to kick in a little more than you've been kicking in.
And right, especially at quarterback.
Especially. Are you going to do that with him, or are you going to find a somewhat comparable talent, if that's what you have, that you don't have to pay as much?
And one of the things Bengals left tackle Andrew Whitworth was talking about, you know, that Jay Gruden did leave the Bengals. He accepted the head coaching job with the Washington Redskins. And so Hugh Jackson is now the new offensive coordinator for the Bengals. He was a receivers coach there back when Bob Gretkowski was the offensive coordinator in that Carson Palmer 2005, 2006, those years. But Andrew Whitworth said that Hugh Jackson is implementing more up-tempo for their offense, but they're not necessarily just going up-tempo and throwing the ball. They're going up-tempo running smash mouth with Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill and, you know, the law firm. And
Did that pretty well a year ago.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how the Bengals turn out. Okay, the Browns. I mean, the Browns, seriously, you know, I don't know. The Browns should get, if there's residuals from the ratings, they should get some, because certainly the ratings were Johnny Football driven, and the Browns, though, trading around and back and forth, and certainly I think contributed to a lot of the drama in the first round Thursday night.
No question, but you look at that list, they look like it looks as if they got some football players to me. I'm not a huge Manziel fan. But when you've had 20 starting quarterbacks since 1999, I guess it's about time to try somebody else. Gilbert, the cornerback from Oklahoma State, was pretty much everybody's first cornerback off the board. Even the people that thought Darquez Denard was actually a better pro prospect respected this guy's ball skills. Look at these highlights, Bob. I mean, touchdowns all over the place, kick returns, pick sixes. He's got the size the NFL's looking for, high pointing it there. He can cover ground. Not a lot not to love about Justin Gilbert of Oklahoma State. And the guy they got in the second round, the offensive lineman from Nevada, Joel Batonio, not a household name, not a real sexy pick, kind of like quarterback was top-loaded this year. Offensive tackle was top-loaded. But Betonio's a guy people think can play guard or tackle in the NFL, and he did that in college against some of your better pass rushers, Clemson and Florida State, and even Anthony Barr from UCLA. Betonio had a real good game against him. So if you can do it against the big boys, maybe you can play with the big boys, even if you're from Nevada.
Right, and the Browns certainly have openings along their offensive line, really. Joe Thomas is the only guy up front that you say, or Alex Mack, too, where they match that offer. But those two guys, with the exception of those, you know, and you mentioned Betonio plays both guard and tackle, so there should be, you know, plenty of spots available to him.
Yeah, I think he gets a job somewhere right out of the chute. And that, you mentioned Mack and Joe Thomas. It's a revolving door around those two guys. What's the point of having two guys that good if you can't stabilize at least the majority of your starting five? So that's on the to-do list in Cleveland. Getting that starting quarterback is on the to-do list in Cleveland. A few other things as well.
Yeah, you know, and the only thing, though, is the Browns, they can't help themselves. I mean, they, in my opinion, they made some solid picks. But, you know, the Jimmy Haslam stuff about Johnny Manziel talking about, you know, act like a backup and telling the story about the homeless guy who came up to him outside of a restaurant and told him he had to draft Johnny football. You know, sometimes ownership needs to be seen and not heard so much. And I don't know why you would go in telling Manziel to act like a backup. I mean, let it play out.
You certainly wouldn't tell him he's the starter.
Exactly.
The idea is, as you say, to let it play out, not predetermine anything.
I mean, you pick this guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's ready to go. Look, he wore a helmet.
He wore
and
a helmet
pads
and
for his pro day. I mean, come on, he's ready.
But, I mean, right, why would you set
remember the deal that was made about that?
What, wearing the helmet
and
pads? Yeah. Well, it is something that you don't see that often. I don't know that it was anything, you know, he didn't reinvent the wheel. But I think that for him to do it in this setting, because of the reputation he had, you know, is kind of a...
He has a good agent.
Yeah. Well, hey. Very good agent. I mean, isn't that what it's all about?
Interesting, before we get out of here, Pierre Desir from Lindenwood, which is in St. Charles, Missouri. I know you knew that. It's not in the SEC. It's not in the Big Ten. It's Division II.
Right.
But this kid's got size, and I think it's 25 picks in 44 career starts for Lindenwood.
Is Lindenwood anywhere near Tusculum? You know, I went to Tusculum.
I do
Ricardo
not.
Ricardo Coakley, another one of those. Really nice size guys, a lot of interceptions.
Press corner, a lot of
press
picks.
Corner, a lot of, yeah. Sometimes they work out.
They obviously went.
They don't.
But it was considered a deep draft.
Yes.
They, like the Steelers, decided not the top end guys for whatever reason.
Right.
Beyond what they got in Justin Gilbert. But they were able to supplement that with a maybe in Pierre Desir.
Well, absolutely. Size, speed,
yeah.
You know, prospect, definitely, you know, someone worth taking a chance on. Okay, that's going to do it for this edition of Steelers.com Live. I want to wish everyone a happy Memorial Day weekend. And, you know, as you're, what are you going to grill some dogs and burgers on? That's always a big Memorial
Might
Day
get
thing.
Around to that.
Just remember the people who served or are serving in our military. For Mike Prosciutto, I'm Bob Labriola. Thanks for watching. Happy Memorial Day weekend. We will see you here next Thursday at 4:00.